On the afternoon of January 2nd, 1935, a man arrived at the President Hotel in downtown Kansas City and specifically requested an interior room on an upper floor. He gave the name of Roland T. Owen and was given room 1046 on the 10th floor. Owen would inform them that he would be having a friend come by at some point during his stay, and he asked if his door could remain unlocked. Although no one else was ever seen entering room 1046, until 2 days later, when a bellboy made a gruesome discovery. So let's take a look at one of the most suspicious deaths to ever haunt the heart of America, the man in room 1046. I'm your host, Michael, and this is Strange and Unexplained. As they escorted Mr. Owen to his room on the hotel's 10th floor, the bellhop couldn't help but notice he didn't have a single bag or any luggage at all with him when he reached room 1046. Mr. Owen entered his new room and placed a toothbrush, some toothpaste, and a hairbrush from his jacket on the dresser. Kinda strange, but some people travel light. So anyways, later on the same day, a housekeeper named Mary Soptic knocked at the door to room 1046. There was no response. Expecting the room to be empty, she opened the door and found Mr. Owen seated in a chair in the far corner. She reported that the room was almost completely dark, with the shades drawn and the lights all turned off, all except for a small lamp in the corner next to Mr. Owen. Mary mentioned that he appeared to be on edge and was showing signs of paranoia. He watched her clean his room as he sat in the corner awkwardly in silence. When she finished, Owen asked her to leave the door unlocked. He was expecting a visitor. 4 hours later, returning to room 1046 with fresh towels, Mary discovered that the door was still unlocked. Inside, however, Owen was found lying on the neatly made bed, appearing to be asleep. Even in the dark room, Mary noticed a note on his bedside table, and it stated, quote, "Don, I will be back in 15 minutes. Wait," end quote. The following morning, Mary arrived at the room around 10:30 a.m. to do her usual cleaning. She discovered that Owen's door had been locked this time. Thinking Owen probably wasn't in the room, she used her master key to unlock the door and let herself in. She was immediately taken aback. Seated once again in the corner of the room was Owen. He didn't say anything when she entered, nor did he object to her being there. So Mary went on about her business as if he wasn't there. As she was cleaning, the phone began to ring. Owen quickly picked it up. He listened for a moment before stating, "No, Don, I don't want to eat. I am not hungry. I just had breakfast. No, I am not hungry." And then he hung up the phone. Only after the call, Owen then awkwardly tried to make small talk with Mary, mostly about her job and the hotel itself. Mary answered his questions politely, and when she was done, she left quietly. After that interaction, Mary claimed she had the feeling that someone was keeping Mr. Owen in room 1046, maybe against his will. But later in the day, Mary came back with her load of fresh towels. However, when she went to knock this time, she noticed two distinct voices in heated conversation in the room. After announcing herself through the door, a voice shouted at her to go away, that they had plenty of towels. Now, Mary knew there weren't any towels in the room at the time because she'd already cleaned out the dirty ones, but at the request of the guests, she left. The next day, January 4th, 1935, around 7 a.m., a bellhop was alerted about room 1046's phone being off the hook for 10 minutes. When he arrived at the room, the bellhop found the door locked with a do not disturb sign on the doorknob. He knocked on the door and he heard a muffled voice from inside instruct him to enter. Again, the door was locked. After knocking more, the bellhop called out for Mr. Owen to hang up the phone, assuming he had probably knocked it off the hook by accident. An hour and a half later, the operator contacted the front desk once again, stating that the phone in room 1046 was never returned to its receiver. Now, beginning to fear that something might be wrong, a second bellhop returned to the room and used a master key to enter. The room was still dimly lit, and the hallway light only partially illuminated a man sprawled out naked on the bed. The phone and its stand had been knocked over. The bellhop placed the receiver back in its cradle. Assuming the man was drunk, he went back down to the lobby and went on about his day. Then, an hour later, the telephone operator made another call. The phone was still off the hook. But how? When the bellhop investigated this time, he was met with a gruesome scene that he described as a bloodbath. The bellhop rushed into action to help the guest, and soon a small group would form in the hallway, seeing what all the fuss was about. Luckily, the police were also called immediately and were able to make it down to the hotel in just a matter of minutes. Medical professionals noted signs of severe trauma that had been inflicted upon Mr. Owen, noting that not only was the man found in the room's bathtub with his hands, feet, and neck bound with a clothesline, but his chest also showed numerous stab wounds, and his head had been clearly beaten. Later on at the hospital, it would also be noted that Owen suffered both a punctured lung and a fractured skull, but somehow was still alive. But when pressed by police about who had done this to him, barely clinging to life, he still replied, "Nobody." Roland T. Owen fell into a coma and was pronounced dead in the early hours of January 5, 1935. Medical professionals determined that Owen's injuries occurred prior to the bellhop's initial visit to his room that morning, meaning that at the time of Mr. Owen's discovery, the blood on him and the hotel room had completely dried, meaning that whatever happened to Mr. Owen happened at least 6 or 7 hours before he was found. Kansas City police noted that all of Owen's clothing and personal items were missing from the room, with the only exceptions being a torn label from a men's necktie, a hairpin, an unlit cigarette, and a single glass. A glass that reportedly had traces of woman's fingerprints. Damn, they even took a man's toothbrush. That's cold. But if things weren't already confusing enough for investigators, they were about to find out just how mysterious Mr. Roland T. Owen really was. For starters, they couldn't find any record of a Roland T. Owen, not only in Kansas City, but none of the surrounding areas either. Meaning not only did they not know what happened behind the door of room 1046, they didn't even know who it had happened to. The body was stored in a local funeral home where thousands of residents came to view it. However, no one was able to ID their mystery man. The Kansas City police then initiated a nationwide search, with law enforcement agencies across the country trying to identify an individual with a distinctive hexagon-shaped scar on the side of his head. But after no luck, it was announced that the body would be buried in a pauper's grave. Following this, however, the funeral home received a call from an unknown man who insisted that Roland be buried in Memorial Park Cemetery and offered to cover all of the expenses. The caller informed them that Owen hadn't played the game fair, and cheaters usually get what's coming to them. And when asked why they were offering to cover the cost, they simply replied, "I'm doing this for my sister." Soon after, the funds were delivered in a newspaper, and 13 American Beauty roses were delivered to his funeral, along with a card bearing the message, "Love forever, Louise." The funeral came and went, and it seemed as if we were never going to know what happened at the President Hotel. That is, until the spring of the following year. A friend had gifted Ruby Ogletree with the most recent edition of American Weekly. And within its pages, there was something of interest that the friend wanted Ruby to see. She was shocked by what she found. As she read through the article about Roland T. Owen's death, she came across a familiar face staring back at her. The face of her 19-year-old son, Artemis Ogletree. Artemis had left home in Alabama to explore the world, and Ruby hadn't heard from him since. Initially, he would send her handwritten letters. However, over time, the frequency of these letters dwindled. When speaking with authorities, Ruby revealed that she had received three typed letters, apparently sent by Artemis from three different cities in the spring of 1935. This struck her as odd at the time, however, as she was certain Artemis didn't know how to even use a typewriter. Moreover, the letters contained unfamiliar slang that didn't align with her son's usual way of speaking, and it was now clear to Ruby that the person who had sent those letters could not have been her son, because apparently he was already gone when she received them. Identifying Artemis did not provide investigators with the answers that they had hoped for, and ultimately just led to more questions. Unfortunately, the reasons for his presence in room 1046 and whoever his mysterious guest was died with him. But there you have it, guys. That's the mysterious case of the man in room 1046. One of the most confusing and suspicious deaths to ever rock the great Kansas City area. As always, we hope you've enjoyed this episode. Please like and subscribe for more content just like this. And don't forget to follow us on social media everywhere at True Crime Guys. And subscribe on YouTube for videos, shorts, posted almost daily. Thank you for joining us again on Strange and Unexplained. And we'll see you next time. But until then, be strange, all right? Just don't be strangers. See ya.